I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a daily look at how North Carolina is dealing with COVID-19 and what we're learning about ourselves in the face of a global crisis. Today, the South. Earlier this afternoon, Governor Roy Cooper gave an update on North Carolina. Specifically, he addressed what he believes needs to happen before reopening areas of the state.
The president's plan requires a 14-day reduction in COVID-positive cases. North Carolina does not meet that criteria. It also requires testing and tracing. And what we're doing is looking at all of this as a whole and going to make determinations on the range of goals that we need to hit in order to ease restrictions. And we want to do that.
Cooper's gubernatorial colleagues in the South have some different ideas. Yesterday, Georgia Governor Brian Kemp said he was lifting restrictions across the state within the next week on businesses from restaurants to hair salons to bowling alleys.
Well, I can tell you, I don't give a damn about politics right now. We're talking about somebody that has put their whole life into building a business that has people that they love and work with every single day, working in many of these places, that are at home, going broke, worried about whether they can feed their children, make the mortgage payment.
Same goes for our neighbor to the south. Henry McMaster is the governor of the other Carolina. He's easing restrictions on some businesses, a move he clearly sees as a way to gain an advantage in competing with other states, like, say, North Carolina.
South Carolina's business is business. We must, when this began, we were outrunning the competition in many of our races with the competition. We want to be able to continue to do that when this virus is gone.
Similar restrictions are being lifted in Tennessee, Florida, Alabama, and Texas. Leaders there are getting ahead of what epidemiologists and health experts say is safe, and possibly creating a longer pandemic with even worse economic impacts. And those experts point specifically to testing, that we need to be able to do more than we can right now. So let's begin there with Rose Hoban, the editor of North Carolina Health News, about where North Carolina is with testing.
Our capacity to test is still rather limited, and it depends a lot on where you are. So first off, I asked the Department of Health and Human Services this question the other day, and it turns out the state public health laboratory only has capacity to run about 400 tests a day, mm-hmm. plus or minus. Mm-hmm. Those are the most accurate and turn around most quickly, like in less than a day, of all the tests in North Carolina. Now, some places like UNC or Atrium Health System, which is based in Charlotte, have tests that they use intramurally, and those can also turn things around in less than a day. UNC just rolled out a rapid test that returns results in about an hour, but that's extremely limited, and they use it, for instance, for patients coming into the emergency department so they know how to move forward with them. And again, those are just inside the walls of those institutions.
Right.
Then there's commercial tests like from Quest or LabCorp, and LabCorp is based in Burlington. Those companies are national, so they're not just running tests for North Carolina. And all the patients from our state end up in the same queue as folks from, say, Illinois who've had their tests sent to LabCorp. Those commercial tests were being turned around in days, sometimes more than a week, which was a limitation. Like, if you think about it, you got tested on a Monday and you didn't hear back till, say, like Saturday or the following Monday. What do you do in the meantime, mm-hmm. right? Do you isolate yourself? You go to the hospital? And if you're not isolating yourself, that's a lot of time to infect others. And this is an incredibly infectious disease, as we've found.
Right.
I wrote to LabCorp today. They responded that they're now turning around tests in a couple days now, like 1-2 days. Mm-hmm. And they said they're running about 60,000 tests per day. And again, nationally. Finally, there's serological testing for antibodies. There was this great webinar from Duke today where they talked at length about testing issues. One of the speakers called serological testing a free-for-all. The Food and Drug Administration has issued more than 70 emergency use authorizations for these tests, and companies are rushing them to market, and many of them haven't been validated yet. I mean, you may have heard about the whole problem that Spain has had. They bought these tests from China, and it turned out that they weren't valid, and then they sent them back to China, and the Chinese sent them more tests, and those also weren't valid. And in short, that lack of validation means we can't be sure that they're not returning false positives or false negatives. You know, that company Scanwell that we talked about last week,
right.
It's being used in the Wake Forest University study.
Yeah.
They have a backlog of tests that they've ordered from China. And according to the New York Times this weekend, Scanwell had ordered tests from one of 11 companies that China has given the green light to for their antibody tests. Apparently, Scanwell expected to receive 1 million tests each week from this company called Innovita, one of the 11 companies, but it's still waiting for its first shipment of 10,000, which was scheduled to arrive a couple weeks ago. And then, of course, part of that Wake Forest study is to validate that test. So it's not like once Scanwell gets the test that the company will be able to say, OK, this is accurate. Let's go. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot we still don't know about serological testing. If it takes, like, say, 10 days to develop antibodies after you've been infected, you know, that means you can be infected. You can infect other people. You're getting back an antibody test that maybe says you're negative, or maybe you get a false positive. So you go out there thinking, oh, I've had it. I'm good. I can't get infected again. So we don't know. And finally, even if we do have an accurate serological test, there's this question of getting it manufactured to scale in a world where everyone will want to buy it.
Right.
So even though science is proceeding at a breakneck pace, we're still not out of the woods yet in terms of testing.
We've talked a lot about these being unique times for hospitals, but one issue that came up yesterday was that nationally and locally, admissions to emergency departments are down. Do hospital officials know why that is, and what are their concerns about there being fewer ED visits not related to COVID-19?
Well, you know, that was really interesting. I was on a call yesterday with the head of the emergency department services at UNC, and he and an ICU colleague were talking about the number of people coming to emergency departments being down. That's a nationwide thing. That's down like 40%. And that's for everyday problems like stroke or heart attacks or even injuries like broken bones. And I think we talked about this before, like, you know, people aren't out there. They're not driving as much.
Right.
They're not, you know, exerting themselves as much. Mm-hmm. Right. But still, they're concerned about it because they're like, there's probably still things happening out there. And they're concerned and they think there might be a number of reasons for the depression of the number of people showing up. And one is that people are worried about catching COVID if they show up in an emergency department. So they're delaying care.
Mm-hmm.
Two, they may be worried about insurance costs. You know, there's a lot of people who just lost jobs, and with it, they lost their health insurance, which tends to come from employers. And then I'm in the middle of this call, and my email comes with a press release from Atrium Health in Charlotte, where they're talking about the same thing. So, you know, that thing like two incidents is a trend.
Mm-hmm.
The two UNC doctors were very concerned about how delays in care can result in worse outcomes. So you might remember last week we talked about stroke care and how when I worked in the emergency department, we used to say time is brain. Well, that's true whether there's a coronavirus pandemic or not.
Mm-hmm.
If people have symptoms and wait, they might wait too long and end up having more damage to their brain than they would have had otherwise. Or they might even die when they might have been saved. There's a slew of research on this for stroke and heart attack and other chronic and acute conditions that delaying care is a problem. There are going to be injuries and deaths from this, morbidity and mortality in healthcare ES. That would be collateral damage of this pandemic. And that, by rights, should be included in the toll taken by COVID. And those will probably be more estimates when it's all said and done, rather than like hard numbers.
Right. Outbreaks at nursing homes continue to be a cause for concern here and across the world, really. At North Carolina Health News, you found that many of the facilities here in North Carolina had staffing shortages before the pandemic hit. And how might that have played into the outbreaks at nursing homes?
Well, my reporter Thomas Goldsmith went digging into federal databases to look at staffing patterns in these nursing homes. You know, by the way, we don't know the names of all the facilities because some counties are revealing them and others are not. Anyway, Tommy went looking at the homes we know of and found that many of them have had chronic staffing issues. So think about it. Right. Care for people in a nursing home can be intense. You're turning people in bed. You're walking with them as you hold their arm. You're feeding them. It's a time-intensive business that requires hands-on care by people who are often making, what, $13 an hour, if that? So many of these places are plagued by short staffing to start with. Now add COVID to the mix. You're making crap money. Mm-hmm. So you have to go to work even though you're not feeling great. Right. And then there are vulnerable people there. You're a certified nursing assistant helping 8 or 9 people over the course of the day. You're being asked to do extra shifts. Maybe you're doing some overtime pay with that. So you work a 12 or a 16 hour rather than an 8 hour shift. You have your hands on more people as a result. I mean, you can see where this is going, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then there's protective equipment. Do you have an N95 mask, a face shield? And then say there is an outbreak in your facility. Are you going to risk your life possibly for $13 an hour?
Right.
So we spoke to Medicaid head Dave Richard yesterday. He said that the state is giving enhanced reimbursement to skilled nursing facilities. So if you have an outbreak that's 2 or more people, everybody that's served in the building gets an $85 a day increase. And it's $560 extra for each COVID case. But, you know, many skilled nursing facilities are privately owned, privately held. So, you know, there's little ability to peer into the operations and, more importantly, the finances. I asked Richard if the nursing facility is not being told to pay workers more with that money. And he said it's complicated. You know, how much is the right amount to bump up workers? You know, needs might be different from one facility to another. You know, they've got to do things like do extra disinfection. So maybe they're paying for a cleaning company to come in. In some, he said, quote, "I always know that there's always a chance that we may have a facility not use it appropriately." And he said they'd continue to monitor each facility. And again, a quote, "Obviously, this is, you know, a short-term model. We'll monitor how it works and what those providers do. And if we need to make adjustments, we'll make adjustments." So, you know, if I had a relative in a skilled nursing facility, I'd be watching those places like a hawk and asking a lot of questions.
Rose Hoban is the editor of North Carolina Health News. She's also a registered nurse who holds a master's degree in public health. And she's taking your questions about COVID-19 health matters in North Carolina, including how the pandemic is affecting our hospitals, health policy, and what to consider as you make decisions for yourself and your loved ones. Use the hashtag AskWUNC on Twitter to get your questions to Rose. Hang tight, more in a moment.
Hi there, my name is Celeste Gracia, and I work with Dave at WUNC North Carolina Public Radio, which produces this podcast. And this is a good time to say thank you to everyone who supports WUNC. Whether you are an individual donor or a business, we can't say thank you enough for providing us with the resources and opportunity to serve the state of North Carolina with up-to-the-minute news and information. Everyone at WUNC is working around the clock to do just that at this unique and perilous moment in our history, and we couldn't do it without your help. So thank you. And if you are able, please go to WUNC.org if you want to donate for the first time or to increase your support.
Reopening North Carolina's economy is not a simple concept. Health experts agree there has to be a comprehensive plan, it should be gradual, and timing is important. That's especially true for small business owners who don't want to expose their customers to COVID-19, but who can't stay closed much longer without help. Striking that balance between public health and financial well-being has been on Christina Pellick's mind this week.
If the governor were to say, like, okay, we're reopening tomorrow, I don't think that I would choose to go back to work tomorrow. If things like my business are reopened, I mean, I feel like it will just be unleashing an army of Typhoid Marys.
Pellick owns the Fuss and Bother Hair Salon in Durham. It's been closed for about a month.
But I'm sure that some of my clients would be frustrated with my decision and that they might choose to go somewhere that decided to go ahead and reopen.
Small businesses had been fighting over a limited pot of money for loans from the federal government, and it's already run out. Pellick did not apply for one. She says she has enough savings and a husband who can work from home. But not everyone does.
The way my business is structured, I have 4 people who work with me, but they are all self-employed. We work as a team, but they're not my employees. In some ways right now, that's unfortunate for them because it's meant that they're not able to get unemployment yet.
Pellick's own financial situation means the decision is easy for her to stay closed. But from where she sits, that's exactly the point.
I think a lot of the people who are talking about wanting to reopen, most of them are being driven by, you know, financial needs. It's coming down to the lack of support that small businesses and self-employed people, that we aren't getting a lot of help. It just seems wrong that health decisions are being driven by financial need.
That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Dave DeWitt. Will Michaels is our producer. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.